New Hampshire holds the first election primary in the country, and we know the results after yesterday's vote. We're looking at the race to be the Democratic Party's nominee for President of the United States, the challenger to current President Donald Trump. And we're talking about what the vote tells us and what maybe we can't glean from New Hampshire. It's the morning show. I'm Keely Woltina, in for Kate Archer-Kent. What do you think? What did you watch closely as the New Hampshire primary results rolled in? How much weight do you think we should put on one state's primary and this part of the election season? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Emily Baer is an assistant professor of political science at the University of New Hampshire. Her research examines the development and evolution of American political institutions. That includes Congress and political parties and the influence of women in politics. Emily, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Did you see any surprises yesterday as we saw the results start coming in last night?
You know, I think the results on the whole were not all that surprising. Sanders has a strong base of support in New Hampshire. He won the state by a very large margin back in 2016. He's what I would call home state adjacent, right? Just right over the border. So voters here know him, and it's not surprising that he did well. I think that more than anything, my takeaway from the New Hampshire results is that there are still some pretty deep divisions within the Democratic Party, and there's not necessarily one candidate that can build a coalition across those divisions.
Yeah, because we saw Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders taking top billing here in Vermont. And then right underneath him was Pete Buttigieg, who is seen as a more moderate candidate. Let's talk about Sanders, though. You mentioned in 2016 he won New Hampshire with something like 60% of the vote. He won again yesterday, but only with 26% of the vote. Here he is talking with his supporters.
With victories behind us, popular vote in Iowa and the victory here tonight, we're going to Nevada, we're going to South Carolina, we're going to win those states as well.
You know, Emily, because you said you haven't seen a candidate that seems to unite everybody, does Sanders have enough momentum to keep winning, to gain the nomination?
Yeah. So one of the things I'll say is that New Hampshire, in contrast to Iowa, you know, there's a clear winner, right? It's very clear that Sanders did win the race, but he has two far more moderate candidates who finished right behind him in New Hampshire. And he hasn't made a significant effort to appeal to those moderate voters who are backing Buttigieg, who are backing Klobuchar. And so far, he does seem to have, you know, really secured the support of the progressive wing of the party. Warren finished kind of a disappointing fourth, although she's looking forward to Super Tuesday and the two other early states to come. But right now, I think what we're seeing more than anything is still this clear division between the progressive wing of the party and the more moderate wing.
I just wonder if you think that the way that we are generally as a population categorizing these candidates, is it fair or is it accurate? I mean, we're talking about Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren and Sanders in the same progressive camp. And then we're putting Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar and Buttigieg and even former Vice President Joe Biden in this more moderate camp.
Yeah, no, I think it's fair to say that some of those differences are very much overly simplified, right? And if you look at the voting records, say, in the Senate of Klobuchar, Sanders and Warren, they don't differ all that much. Having said that, I do think there is a division here, not just in terms of policy, but also in terms of strategy, what it is the party needs to do to win in November. Should they be making an effort to try to bring in new voters, which is, I think, the claim that Senator Sanders has been making throughout this campaign, or should they be trying to win back those so-called Obama-Trump voters, which is something that I think the more so-called moderate candidates in the race have tried to do.
And right. And there's not agreement among the candidates, but there are also doesn't seem to be agreement among Democrats who do want to see President Trump defeated. They don't really have a strategy either that aligns solidly on one of those sides of what we should do.
Yeah, no, I think it's a clear voters absolutely want an electable candidate. I just don't think they know exactly who that candidate is yet. And I think, again, the results from New Hampshire and as well in Iowa reflect the kind of uneasiness or unsatisfactory results among the electorate. They're not quite sure where they should put their support. There was a record number of kind of late deciding voters in New Hampshire. It's kind of a famously late deciding state, but about 50% of voters were still kind of undecided about a week before the election. And so that means that the last couple days, including the debates on Friday night, really helped swing voters in support of Klobuchar, for example. It'll be interesting to see if she can build on that momentum going forward.
Yeah.
And we would be seeing that among some of the other candidates as well.
Certainly. It is, we're talking about the first primary of the season. Emily Baer is an assistant professor of political science at the University of New Hampshire. And we're talking about the results of last night's primary and what we should glean from that. And your calls are welcome at 800-642-1234. Do you think any of the Democratic candidates have a chance at beating President Trump in November? What do you want to hear from them? Maybe you voted for President Trump and you're looking at the Democratic field and trying to figure out either, you know, who you'd like to see so that you can keep President Trump in office, or maybe somebody who might encourage you to switch your vote. Give us a call and give us your perspective at 800-642-1234. Emily, Pete Buttigieg had this name recognition suddenly out of Iowa. We knew he was part of the contest, but really rose to the top of the headlines. He finished second yesterday, a pretty close second, and here he is last night.
We are clear-eyed about the challenge before us, and we must be equally clear about the choice at hand. My competitors and I share the same fundamental goals: bringing balance to our economy, guaranteeing health care to every American, combating a climate crisis and a rising tide of gun violence. But we do differ in what we believe it will take to make that happen.
With the results out of Iowa and then that placement in New Hampshire, does that give Buttigieg an opportunity that maybe the Democratic establishment will rally around him?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I will say Buttigieg had a very good kind of organizational base here in New Hampshire prior to the Iowa results. So that part wasn't as surprising to me. But typically what we talk about with this early stage of the presidential nominations process is something called the bandwagon effect. So if a candidate does well in those early states, or perhaps does better than expectations, which I think certainly Buttigieg has been doing, they can build on that support in later states. It tends to bring more endorsements, more fundraising, and it encourages voters in those later scheduled states to take a second look at that candidate. And of course, with the good comes the bad. So there's obviously, they tend to dive a little bit deeper into their record as well. But that certainly gives him the momentum coming out of Iowa, coming out of New Hampshire, and going forward to the later states.
Sure, because with these arguably long election cycles, you know, there's the concern that you might peak too early and then suddenly people lose interest before they have a chance to vote you in.
Yeah, although I will say, I think that's one of the things that's a little bit different about this 2020 Democratic race is, you know, typically we would see more candidates drop off at this point, given their kind of low performance in these early states. We did see Bennett and Yang drop off after last night's results. But we still have five competitive candidates going forward into Nevada and South Carolina and likely into Super Tuesday. And so this is going to be a very long election cycle.
Yeah, those five competitive candidates that made the ballot, in addition to two others who didn't make it up for the vote. And that was Andrew Yang and Michael Bennett, who dropped out as of yesterday. We're talking with Emily Baer. She stays with us. She's an assistant professor of political science at the University of New Hampshire, which is fitting because we're following last night's primary in New Hampshire and learning who could be a Democratic contender for president. We continue this conversation with your thoughts, your ideas at 800-642-1234. Tell us what you noticed, what you're hoping to hear from candidates, and maybe even whether you think there's too much speculation at this point in the race to really help us be informed about what it might look like in November. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. I'm Keely Boltina. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina. Democratic presidential hopefuls who landed toward the top in New Hampshire primaries are celebrating. Those who trailed argue it's early, considering it's the first primary of the 2020 election. We're talking with Emily Baer, who's an assistant professor of political science at the University of New Hampshire, about these results and what they mean, what they don't mean. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. Tell us, how do you think the Democratic primary is shaping up? And are candidates addressing the issues that you think are most important? 800-642-1234. The third place finisher, Amy Klobuchar, did well yesterday, had about 20% of the vote. She seems to be battling Pete Buttigieg for this more moderate wing of the Democratic Party. Here she is talking about defeating President Trump.
We know that we win by bringing people with us instead of shutting them out. Donald Trump's worst nightmare is that the people in the middle, the people who have had enough of the name calling and the mudslinging, have someone to vote for in November.
Emily, what is it about Klobuchar that seemed to resonate with New Hampshire voters?
Yeah, so I think it's a couple of things. I think she comes off as very relatable, right? She's someone who I think is very charismatic, and people in New Hampshire, kind of average everyday people, do feel like she's someone they can relate to. She is more moderate. She has a reputation for that. Certainly for working in Congress, she's known for working across the aisle with Republicans. And at least within the context of this field, I think that's very appealing to voters. Exit polls showed that a large number of those kind of undecided voters that made their decision in the last couple days threw their support behind Klobuchar. She also did very well with older voters, so voters aged 65 and older, which comprise a 25% of the electorate here. So it's I think she's someone who they see as potentially being electable, and she does seem very relatable.
And you use those words in the same sentence, but we're back to that concept of, is electability about more extreme positions, or is it about people that you feel like are closer to the center? We do see in primaries people kind of drift to the edges of the party and then still generally try to come back for the general election. Is that what you're picking up on when you're hearing these candidates talk to people in New Hampshire ahead of this vote?
Yeah, so I think you're right. So in general, the trends we see in primaries is we see kind of candidates, if it's in either the Republican or the Democratic Party, you're going to see them kind of pull to one of those two sides. And then in the general election, they have to come back towards the middle. Having said that, New Hampshire is a little bit of a weird state in that it's a little bit more of a moderate state, right? The largest number of voters are those undeclared voters, so independent voters who are not affiliated with one party or the other. So being a moderate is a little bit more of an asset here than you would see in potentially in other states.
And you mentioned that those semi-open primaries, so voters don't have to be registered with a party in order to vote in its primary in New Hampshire. 42% of voters identified as independent in those initial results. Could some of those be people who support President Donald Trump?
Who would strategically vote in the Democratic primary to try to sway the results one way or the other?
They could be, that's one aspect of it that could be strategic. There's also the idea that it's like, well, if I get to weigh in on this, then, I could vote in good faith for someone else. But that idea there isn't a requirement that keeps them out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of that plays into the fact that New Hampshire residents are very proud of the fact that they do have the first in the nation's primary. They are very spoiled by the amount of attention they get from the candidates. And I think, frankly, they do take their role in this process incredibly seriously. They make a big effort to go out to rallies, to go out to forums, to try to talk to the candidates. They spend a lot of time talking to their friends and neighbors and family members about who, which candidate is the best, which candidate kind of most represents their views, which candidate they think can win in November and could, of course, win the Democratic nomination. So they take it very seriously. And so I think that to the extent that you do see those undeclared voters participating in the Democratic primary, it's because they really do care about this process and they want to kind of have their say.
We are talking with Emily Baer. She's an assistant professor of political science at the University of New Hampshire. We're taking your calls. What did you see in the results out of the New Hampshire primary yesterday? How much weight do you think that we should put on those results? Do you think that the candidates are talking about the right points? Do those different topics resonate with you? 800-642-1234. There's a line for you there, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren used her speech after the primary yesterday, when she didn't do very well, not to talk about her left-leaning counterpart necessarily, but about the other woman who finished in the top three. That's Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar. Let's listen to Warren
now. Let's just check the facts. Amy and I are the only candidates in this race who are not either billionaires or supported by super PACs. And unlike other candidates, I don't fund my campaign by spending time behind closed doors sucking up to wealthy donors.
Emily Baer, part of your expertise is the influence of women in politics. What do you hear there?
I think there is something about the Democratic field has become increasingly more diverse in a number of ways. And there is more of an expectation now that we will see women run and run competitively for the nomination. Neither Warren nor Klobuchar have made gender a significant part of their campaign. And I think part of that is quite strategic. But I think it is nice to see women candidates supporting each other to the extent that, that will help to reshape kind of what we expect to see in executive office holders.
Yeah. Why might Warren not have initially pointed out and took a bunch of time to explain the differences between Sanders and Warren? Sanders had a really great night. I mean, does Warren still have a chance with this progressive wing of the party?
I think that Warren's kind of pathway to the nomination is really built on being a bridge between the more progressive wing of the party and the more moderate wing of the party. Again, this is a difference not just in policy, but in kind of strategy. She has made, again, her voting record is, if you look at her voting record in the Senate and her issue positions, they don't differ that much from Sanders. But kind of strategically, she has made more of an effort to reach out to what we might call the establishment wing of the Democratic Party. She doesn't want to completely blow up the party, right? Which I think is one of the things that for Sanders' supporters is an asset, right? He really does want to remake what the Democratic Party stands for and kind of what government looks like. And Warren is not trying to do that. So she's more of a bridge candidate. I think that would probably be more appealing a little bit later on in the race. So maybe come Super Tuesday, that would be a more appealing route for voters. But right now, I'm not sure in this political climate how much of an appetite there is for that.
And Warren and former Vice President Joe Biden both noted that this is early in the race. Coming off of a poor showing in Iowa, Joe Biden finished fifth in yesterday's contest. Here he is.
Tonight, though, we just heard from the first two of 50 states. Two of them. Not all the nation, not half the nation, not a quarter of the nation, not 10%. Two.
Yeah, Biden said, where I come from, that's the opening bell. Emily, is there still a chance for all of these contenders in this, despite losing the first two contests? Is it really that early?
So it is early in the process, and there are very few delegates at stake in just these first two states. Having said that, it's not great that Biden finished fifth. I think he has been a little bit buttressed by the fact that he is the former vice president. So some of the fall off in support that you would typically receive if you're coming in fifth, he hasn't experienced to quite the extent that, say, if Buttigieg had come in fifth. Again, having said that, it's not great that he finished fifth and he's got a long haul ahead. I think South Carolina is probably going to be his firewall. So if he continues to kind of drop off in support, he's going to have a very long road ahead. And it seems unlikely that he would be able to recover.
Yeah. Biden actually left New Hampshire before the polls closed and went to South Carolina.
Yes.
We've got Doug from Menominee Falls on the line to talk with us. Hi, Doug. What are you seeing?
Hi. Well, I guess you asked about issues, and one of the issues I wish was being discussed would be the deficit, because as I see it, the economy right now is being funded largely by deficit spending. It's really stealing from our children. That I don't see anyone willing to discuss that as an important issue.
All right, Doug, thanks for that. And Emily, Doug brings up the deficit. What are the big issues that these primary candidates think will help them win?
You know, if you look at exit polls from both Iowa and New Hampshire, healthcare is really the kind of singular most important issue for voters. And coming out of the 2018 midterm elections, that was also similarly ranked as kind of the most important issue for voters. I think Democrats see this as a winning issue. And certainly for Sanders' supporters, it was one of the main reasons they supported his candidacy. So I would expect healthcare to be the main issue going forward.
In this race, we do still have Tom Steyer, who finished sixth last night, and Michael Bloomberg, who didn't make the ballot in New Hampshire. At this point, is having more than these top five candidates running distracting for the Democratic Party?
So I tend to be of the belief that the more candidates in the race, the better of a reflection of the diversity of viewpoints within that party. So from a small D democracy standpoint, it's good. Strategically, though, this has the potential to open up wounds within the party that are really hard to kind of sew back together after the convention and going into the general election. So certainly there is kind of a negative piece to this, that if you care about winning, it's hard to have that many candidates in the race.
Certainly. Emily, thank you for breaking it all down for us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Emily Baer is an assistant professor of political science at the University of New Hampshire. And we've been talking about the results after last night's primary, specific to the Democratic nominees for president. Up next is news. Then Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate Jill Karofsky joins the program to discuss her campaign. Are you an undecided voter in the Supreme Court election? How much do you care about candidates' judicial philosophies or their past legal work or who's endorsed their campaigns? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or you can email your question to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Keely Boltina. It's The Morning Show and this is the Ideas Network.